Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
And thank you so much for the egg supply. You
know, yes, I've got to keep it going.
I know. I had these people are every week
asking for eggs. They're hooked.
They are.
What about you? You've never really commented. Do you like them?
No, I'm a raving fan. I just don't want to ask. That's rude.
You can always ask because you know what? I like to pay it forward.
That's the theme of the show today.
That's right. We'll talk about that a little later. Our first guest this morning, now, Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't we see Mike someplace and you're like, oh my gosh, a blast from the past?
That's right. We saw him at the Sandy Springs Expo.
Yes, but you go way back.
Me and Mike go way back. Not my very first, but one of the first businesses I ever had was with Mike. We were partners in the tennis business, Tennis Plus.
Boy, that's a shot from the past.
How many years ago? That was what?
That was in 91, 92.
Right.
I forget when we parted ways, but I think 94 maybe.
But you must have parted ways on a good note. And
no one got hurt.
We did, yeah.
And Mike, you've gone from sweaty tennis to printing, and we're anxious to hear all about your business. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. This morning we have Mike Doherty. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So tell us about PBM Graphics.
I'd rather tell you about tennis. It's a lot more interesting.
There's a lot more funny stories, I'm sure.
Definitely. We're a commercial printing company. We're part of a larger company called Consolidated Graphics that's based out of Texas, and there's 70 companies. Actually, I think it's 71 now, but 70-plus commercial printing companies around the globe, and we put a lot of ink on a lot of paper.
Yeah, the reason I was so excited about having you as a guest is because we like to put a spotlight on businesses in the Atlanta area. Obviously, you do business all over, but people are thinking, gosh, printing, that's so old school. What's changed in your business? I know it's not old school, and people still need you.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because some parts of printing are almost exactly as they were when Gutenberg invented printing back in, gosh, I don't even know, I should know that year, but in the 1400s or 1500s. When he printed the first Bible, some of the parts where the ink actually goes onto the paper are kind of the same, but the part that's changing is the way people acquire the printing and the way they use the printing. So obviously the internet has been a huge factor in how and what we do, and it's forever changing. And I think in 5 years it'll be even different from it is, the way it is now.
And you've been in the printing business a long time, right? Like over 25 years.
Yeah, I started in as a purchasing agent at a wire factory here in Atlanta in 1986, I think.
Wow.
So close to 25 years. So started on the buying side, and now I'm on the selling side.
So maybe walk us through some of the industry changes that might not be obvious. You said some of them are just how they always were.
Mm-hmm.
Are you finding that people are printing less? Or in more color? What's the biggest change?
In some ways, they're printing less, partly because of the information that's available out there. They're targeting their marketing pieces more. So that's one reason for printing less. Obviously, in this recession that we're in, people are printing less just because they're trying to pinch every penny. Forgot where I was going.
The internet and the changes.
The way people buy printing is different. On a small scale, a lot of people are buying printing literally right off the internet. There's companies out there that do what we call as gang run printing. So if you need some business cards, they'll put your business card on a really big sheet with maybe 99 other people's orders, and they print a few hundred sheets of that, and then they cut it up, and they've got 100 sets of business cards. That's one way that things are have changed. The internet makes that possible. The printing side of that's pretty much the same. Gang running has always been around, but it's easy to buy printing on the internet because you can send a digital file over the internet. Here's my artwork. Stick me on your next run, and, they got your cards coming back to you in 2 days. So that part's changed. That's not the type of printing we do, but that's one of the areas that's really been impacted. So it affects the whole industry, and therefore everybody else that it's affected kind of looks at other places to
So do you think that people shop around more because it's easy to kind of get quotes and prices? Whereas before, maybe they had a relationship with the local printer.
Yeah, definitely. It has affected that in some cases. And there's services out there that help even the large buyers shop their printing. There's what's called reverse auctions, which we don't really participate in those. They're kind of dangerous, but some very large companies buy their printing that way. They'll approve 5 or 10 vendors through a process, and then
is this on a project basis, or this is like overall, like our year's worth of printing?
Well, they'll approve the vendors on an annual or maybe even a 2 or 3 year contract. But then when they need an order of something, they will they'll put it out in this reverse auction bid.
Wow!
You know, set a time and say, okay, at 1 o'clock, where whoever's the lowest, these guys get in. Yeah, it's crazy
because they've already been vetted and they've already passed a certain criteria.
Right. Wow, sure,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Are there any unique capabilities that y'all have when it comes to printing that obviously just the customer service aspect isn't there if you're doing it on the internet? So tell us what makes you better.
Well, what makes us better, in my opinion, is that we have a little different approach to how we communicate with the customer. And like I said, we generally deal with larger firms, and they have a lot of different needs, you know, pharmaceutical companies, trading card companies. They all have different needs. So we have these teams set up in our customer service area, I guess, if you will. And, you know, after a salesman puts in an order for something, it kind of turns it over to these teams, and then they communicate back and forth with the customer directly. And there's different roles in that group. There's project managers, there's team leaders, there's, you know, people that do graphics work and some of the pre-press work that we do, that's the technical side. And there's some of those different roles on each team. So when the customer needs something in regard to one of those categories, they can call that person directly, whereas a lot of companies are set up to work everything through the salesperson. And, you know, most salespeople are not the most organized in the world. So,
and they're busy selling.
It's nice. Exactly.
This is something that's sold.
Right.
I got to disagree with that. Salespeople not being organized.
Right. Well, I try to be organized, but I'm a typical salesperson. I am not the best admin person in the world. So it's nice to have a team behind me.
Now, how do you deal with inherently in all printing is those last minute changes and those, you know, it's always a rush. You know, the customer always wants it as soon as possible, but they're always, you know, delaying as long as possible to give you the stuff that you need to get it done as fast as possible. So do these teams kind of help alleviate a lot of that?
You would think so. It's funny you should say that. I've got one particular customer here in Atlanta that does a lot of work with us, and either one of the buyers or the buyer and myself will fly up to our shop, which is in Durham, North Carolina, to do press checks, which is we look at the first sheets coming off on a print run to make sure they're what we want. So, you know, typically you've got everything set up before you go up there, and we're buying these plane tickets the night before, the day of, maybe 2 days is a lot of notice. But anyway, so there's a lot of travel to arrange and all that. But there's many times where we're in the air and the approvals are kind of flying back and forth. And there's many times where we're, you know, waiting by the press for an approval because there's agencies involved and there's legal stuff involved with these pharmaceutical companies. So, yeah, it would be nice to have it 2 weeks beforehand and all that, but it doesn't work that way.
But isn't that just the nature of the business? Like, is there any client that gives it to you 2 weeks before and then just shuts up and just quietly thanks you when you deliver it?
No. If you know of any, please let me know. I would love to help them out. Now, I think, you know, going back to the internet, I think that's changed everybody's thinking. I remember, 30 years ago, the first FedEx commercial with a guy getting pushed down the hall by the paper, and it said, and what was their slogan? When it absolutely positively has to be there overnight.
Right.
That was kind of the start of everything. And now it's like, when it absolutely positively has to be done yesterday, you know, call us for your printing needs. It's the internet's changed that. You know, I thought faxing was pretty cool back in the 80s when you could send a piece of paper to somebody across the world, and now you can send them anything. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy. I think that's the reason everything's.
So you think people's expectations have changed because they're used to instant communication? They think that this is like a magic wand you guys wave, and then the printing just changes exactly the way they imagine it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, everybody expects everything right now. Mm-hmm. Have you ever received an email? You know, you're sitting at your desk, you're you know, watching your email box practically. Right. You get an email, and then 2 seconds later, the phone rings. Hey, I just sent you an email. Well, I know you did. I'm sitting right here. Yeah, you don't have to call me. It's crazy. Yeah,
it is moving fast.
Instant service, yeah.
Definitely moving fast. Crazy. So, Mike, I actually think I met you 5 years ago when you were paying it forward on a charity event that I was working on, and you donated printing when you had your own company.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, at PrintMax. You were very good about that, by the way. I always knew that I could come to you for printing. Not that you need to go to Mike for free printing now, but...
I'm not the boss anymore.
The reason I mention that is I remember your business 5 years ago. Where do you see your business in 5 years?
Maybe back to tennis.
back to tennis, you
if
think?
If things don't go well. No, they're going fine. Actually, our company's doing pretty well in light of all the things that are not going well in the industry, but... I hope to be doing the same thing. I love what I'm doing.
So what's the rewarding part for you?
The paychecks.
That's the rewarding.
No, I do. I actually enjoy the physical, the fact that we're actually making something. You know, when I go to the plant, the machines are running, and we're creating something out of nothing. That's kind of cool.
Do you like that smell? I love that smell.
You know what's scary? I don't smell it anymore.
I don't. Wow.
I think that's not a good sign.
Yeah, that's bad.
25 years around printing, I think something's wrong. So.
Yeah, I love that smell.
Fresh, do you really?
Yeah, fresh ink. And in a factory or in a plant like that, too, where it's just you walk in and it's everywhere.
Yeah. The only time I smell it's when I hadn't been around it in a long time and I walk in and I'm like, oh, yeah, there's that smell.
Do you have clients that have been with you a long time?
Well, after I sold my business you mentioned earlier, I started with PBM Graphics. That's a little over 2 years ago. And so, you know, most of the customers I have, they were given to me. And then I've gotten a few more since then. So, you know, in this role, nobody more than 2 years. Mm-hmm. So just a baby, I guess, in this big commercial printing industry.
So what was it like, what's the difference between working with that small kind of micro business and now you're dealing with these massive businesses? Is the relationship similar or?
Yeah, the people side of it's the same. You got to treat people right.
Right.
And listen to them and do what they want you to do. Not always what they say, but do what they want you to do. So, that part's the same. It's just the type of printing is different and the size of the orders are much greater with this large company. My shop was pretty small.
Right.
But it had a great neighborhood feel, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was nice. I've gotten to know a lot of people in Sandy mm-hmm. Springs over the last... I started that in 97, so I did that for about 11 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you sold it. Is it still there? I haven't even gone back since you're
coming. No, physically it's been moved. Mm-hmm. It was sold to another local printing shop called Allegra Print and Imaging. Mm-hmm. They're on Barfield Road, not too far from here actually, just mm-hmm. maybe a half a mile. Great shop. Glenn and Dina have done a great job, and they've taken care of most of PrintMax's customers.
You'll forever be the PrintMax guy to me.
I think so, yeah.
You will.
I think
you definitely
so.
Will. My kids used to look forward to coming in and seeing you, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So cool. I guess that speaks to, you know, Mike's character. You've got to provide good customer service because kids are usually pretty good judges of character.
Oh,
definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got the thumbs up, I guess.
Yes, you got the thumbs up.
Good deal.
Well, Mike, any stories or any last thoughts for us? You know, for our listeners, everybody loves to hear an inspirational story.
Inspirational story? Mm-hmm.
An inspirational printing story.
Yes.
There's not any. There's not any.
Now, what's the kind of, you mentioned big companies like or pharmaceutical companies. Is that your sweet spot or what size company do you like to do business with?
Well, we do business with large companies generally because we are a large company and just the equipment we have is gigantic. So, you know, you can't print business cards on the stuff we use. So,
what are the things you're printing? Like you're printing annual reports?
Or? Yeah, exactly. Which would be considered a book or
like
booklet.
A book. Do you print books?
Mm-hmm, we do. We do a lot of the web to print books, which are things, you photo books you do on the internet. We're probably the largest producer of that, but you wouldn't know it because you go to Macintosh's site and you do a book. We're the engine behind that. If you go to Blurb, you know.
Some of those print-on-demand places, do those?
Right. So we're the engine behind it. In other words, we have digital print centers that produce the work.
And then so they kind of middleman that, and you're the actual one who's doing the printing for them.
Well, I guess you could say they're the front man because they have the website. They take your money, and they have their own software packages, and then they just tie into our system and send us files to print and ship. So we're just...
So what do you think of that industry, the print on demand? Do you think that's, is that growing for you guys?
It's huge. We did 13 million orders last year.
Wow.
Print on demand. Well, I guess you could say print on demand, but, you know, web to print is what we call it.
Right.
Produced, created on the web. So that's the web to print. Yeah, it's growing very quickly.
Do you have any vendors here locally that, that do that, that are the front person?
In Atlanta, no. I've got one that I'm chasing after to try to convince they should be doing this. It's a greeting card company that basically gets all their cards printed in China because they're dirt cheap, ships them over here, puts them in the stores. So I'm trying to convince them that there's a market, saying, hey, we did 13 million of these last year for these other companies. So
right. So how do you position yourself against those people that want to go overseas thinking they're going to save?
Well, in certain cases, it's, you know, if you can accept the quality that you get out of the out of China or Asia at this point, and you can wait 4 to 6 months for it, then that's the place for you to get your printing right. done. But there's a lot of things to deal with, you know, just getting the orders placed with the language barriers and then waiting for
the
it,
time.
Hoping the ship doesn't get hijacked coming around mm-hmm. Africa.
And then also that getting what you thought you were going to get, right?
Right. Yeah, there's definitely quality issues. I mean, they just have a different standard than we do over here. So, right. But if you're okay with that, then that's not a bad way to go because it is cheaper. But
how much cheaper is it? Is it dramatically cheaper?
It can be, you know, 40% cheaper.
Wow.
So it's a big difference.
Right.
There's some talk that there's subsidies involved from the Chinese government, as there was in the paper industry. So the paper companies are fighting that, and there's some battles going on right now. So that may change the Asian paper that's coming over here.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I can see where tennis would be a whole lot simpler.
Yeah. Yeah, hit the ball back and forth and pick them up and put them in the basket.
Again.
Yeah, do it again. Yeah, definitely.
You know, tennis lessons, that's with summer around the corner. You know, you might need to do a little moonlight
still
and
do
get that,
that
stress
yeah.
out.
You still teach tennis?
The only teaching I do is my youngest daughter. Yeah, she's taken up with tennis pretty well. My other one plays golf. So, yeah, she drags me out there. It keeps me from, you know, forgetting the game too much. So she's kind of got my juices flowing again watching her play. She's getting pretty good. Yeah, it's fun.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for being with us today,
Mike.
Thank
you. I enjoyed it.
Let folks know how they can reach you, too. If you know, if you're listening and you're that big card company in Atlanta that needs to be bringing their business local, how can they reach you?
Right. Well, what's better, a phone number or a
website?
Yeah. Well, I've got my own website that links you into PBM and Consolidated, but it's Mike D. Doherty, and the last name's Doherty. So it's MikeDDoherty.com.
Terrific.
It's got my ugly mug there, so you'll know what I look like. And
there you go. Thanks for being with us today, Mike.
Thanks, Amy. Enjoyed it.
You know, Lee, it's interesting because I do remember when I met Mike, and then it is such a small world because you and I were at the event together, and you're like, I know Mike, and it was back to the tennis, but he really did. He was, when we did Taste of Dunwoody for Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, so many printers get hit up so often for free printing. And I tell you, I always knew I could go to him and he'd do it. And he did it like with a smile on his face and said, hey, I'm happy to give back. And that was such a great feeling. And our next guest this morning is the king of giving back in my mind and helps others give back. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Bob Littell, the Chief Net Weaver.
Hi, Amy. Thanks a lot.
Welcome. You know, Bob, you have a great reputation in Atlanta and in the country and really all over the world for net weaving. And folks that are listening might say, net weaving, am I hearing that right? Is that like networking? What's the difference? Tell us.
Well, Amy, the real simple explanation is net weaving is not an attack on networking. In fact, we tell business people that to be successful in life, you really have to do both. But I found that I wasn't alone, that I had a little bit of a problem with the what's in it for me networking. I mean, almost anybody can identify with the idea of being in a big room, you're having a conversation with someone, and all of a sudden they realize you are not the perfect prospect for them at that immediate moment in time. And the wonderful direct eye contact all of a sudden shifts as they're looking over their left shoulder, then their right shoulder for their next landing spot.
I can relate to that so
and
well.
Everybody can. When I say that to an audience, I just watch the chuckles. And so one of the problems with more traditional networking is the superficiality. And the feeling that it's just a room where everybody's just looking out for their own interests. So net weaving really is the simple explanation is it's a golden rule, meaning you're doing what other people wish that you would be doing for them, but you're doing it absolutely because you genuinely believe with the concept of what goes around truly does come back around. And the other aspect of net weaving is not only are you helping people by either connecting them with someone who they'd benefit meeting or in many cases supplying what we would call no strings attached resources for them, but you're actually, when they typically try to turn the table and say, how can I help you, you simply ask them to pay it forward and do the same thing for two others, and that's the pay it forward aspect.
I love that. Actually, Lee, would you say that Atlanta Business Radio Show is your pay it forward?
Yeah, I think that I try to. I mean, we're always trying to look out for others first.
Yeah, we really do. And we love being able to network and net weave here at the Atlanta Business Radio Show. And Bob, when you were a guest over a year ago, we did learn a lot from you because this show is not only about putting a spotlight on businesses, but connecting like-minded individuals. And sometimes we'll do that and we have to kick them out the door, Bob, because we're like, wait, we got another show coming on, because people really do. When people connect and when the intent is pure, it's so right, and it does feel so good to be able to connect people. You do it in many ways. Tell us some of the things you have coming up, and just so to give people a little idea how you help people NetWeave.
Well, a little background. When I started speaking on NetWeaving, and I was finding that at the end of just about every meeting, probably 8 to 9 out of 10 meetings, the two persons who I would be connecting would turn the tables on me and say, Bob, this has been great, but how can we help you? Well, I was initially saying, well, why don't you Pianto? And they'd kind of look at me strange and say, what do you mean? Why don't you pass it on to two others? Mm. And I kept having people come up to me and say, Bob, haven't you seen the movie Pay It Forward? That's what you're really talking about. And so I bought the movie, watched the movie, bought the book, and then I called Catherine Ryan Hyde, the lady who wrote the book the movie's based on. And very interestingly, it almost took her a year to really create the trust that I wasn't just, because my background, of course, is insurance financial services, but I wasn't just this guy that was trying to take advantage of the pay it forward movement around the world. But I think it was the checks that I kept sending her.
That's what won her over.
That won her over. And now I serve on the Pay It Forward Foundation board. But very interestingly, Catherine Ryan Hyde, first and second, is an author. And she, over the years that I've been on the board there now, she's been pulled in two directions. One is the mission of literacy and teaching younger kids reading and the beauty and the joy of reading. But the other is this movement that literally by itself has taken off all around the world. I mean, if you Google Pay It Forward, there's millions of references. So you would think that the Pay It Forward Foundation is this huge foundation. Well, it's very small. And one of our biggest problems is we give mini grants to school-age kids up to $500 that come up with projects that are consistent with the whole Pay It Forward theme. And we never have enough money to fund all the grants that come in. So about 8 months ago, I came up with this idea of why don't we create a NetWeaving Pay It Forward Week, because with her permission, NetWeaving is known globally as the business version of Pay It Forward, because the idea is you host a meeting to introduce two people to each other with their needs in mind rather than your own, and then somewhere during the meeting, usually towards the end, they will turn the tables, say, how can we help you? And you ask them to pay it forward and do the same thing for two others. So the idea was, why not create, originally it was going to only be a day. Then I created this committee, and the first meeting of the committee, they voted and said, no, it's got to be a whole week, because there are going to be some days where different organizations are having their meetings. And so this has turned into next week, the 26th to the 30th, of being a week where we want to inspire people all across the city of Atlanta to host meetings, to just pick out two people, doesn't have to be a business purpose, but usually it will be, and host a meeting to introduce two people to each other, and then, once again, ask them to pay it forward and to do the same thing subsequently for two other people. And we just believe it's going to have an economic ripple effect, not only in the restaurants, coffee shops, business clubs that it's going to be held, but it's going to carry forward in many ways that we can't even think about today.
What do you tell people who are kind of skeptical in that if I'm always helping somebody else and they're always helping someone else, that it'll eventually get back to me?
Well, Lee, that was one of the real dilemmas I ran into very early in my, quote, net weaving career. And actually, I had quite a few people who were more on the pure salesy, what's in it for me side. And I read a very interesting book by a professor out in California, Dr. Kristen Renwick Monroe. And the book was called The Heart of Altruism. And it said you shouldn't really look at the concept of altruism, the idea of doing something for someone without any expectation of how it's going to help you, as a static concept. You should look at it more as a spectrum. And at one end of the spectrum, she gave the example of probably the purest form of net weaving or of pure altruism in history, and that's when German families hid Jewish families during the Holocaust, knowing if they were caught, it was not only themselves but their whole family. Nothing to gain and everything to lose. The other extreme would be what I call disguised net weaving, and that is where the person is coming across as, oh, I'm doing this purely for your own benefit, but, oh, by the way, here's what I'd like to see you do. And I like to position, if you imagine that spectrum, I like to position net weaving towards the altruistic end, but certainly not pure altruism. And I like to call it enlightened self-interest, that you really are helping the other person, and that's what your motives are. You're connecting them, or you're giving them resources that either you can provide or someone in your network can provide on a gratuitous basis. But you're doing it because you genuinely feel and believe in the law of reciprocity, and that sooner or later what goes around comes around.
I definitely believe that.
Yeah, me too.
I've always believed that. But it is hard. When someone doesn't believe, it's hard to gently bring them around.
Well, but Amy, you know, there's one little catchphrase that I use, and I've embarrassed some pretty what's in it for me networkers by saying, you know what, Joe, if you host a meeting and if you put two people together totally with their needs in mind, and you just sit back after making an introduction, telling them a little bit about net weaving and what it's all about, and then you sit back and not only watch as they discover ways to help each other, but they also uncover people that they know in common living next door on the same block that they never would have guessed if you hadn't have made that connection. And so what I basically say to those skeptics is, I just got to tell you, Joe, if you don't walk out of that meeting after connecting those two people and you don't go out higher than either of them, this just isn't a concept for you.
Yeah, you're right.
Because the two immediate benefits to net weaving, rather anything comes back ever, are if you truly enjoy connecting people, it energizes you. It makes you better at everything you do. And the reason I wrote the second book, The Heart and Art of Net Weaving, was because what I realized is that when you become an ambassador of this concept, regardless, you don't have to be me to be an ambassador of the concept, it actually elevates your image in other people's eyes, because it's not rocket science. It's just the golden rule.
Yeah. I will say one of the biggest compliments I ever got from anyone was someone in business that introduced me to someone else and said, instead of I was a go-getter, I was a go-giver. And I was like, okay, that felt good. But there is something that feels really good inside when you connect two people and they're able to do business together. During this week of net weaving and pay it forward, how are you doing that?
Well, what we're trying to do, other than the filling up the restaurants and the business clubs and hotels, as I said, with just people being encouraged to host a meeting and then actually ask them simply to pay it forward, we've got several events. We're doing an event at the Buckhead Club where the Buckhead Club was sort of the first business club in Atlanta to truly embrace net weaving. and it's just part of their fabric now that it's so easy to meet people there. But the biggest event, and we're doing the same thing on Thursday, both a luncheon and an evening event at the 191 Club, but those are pretty much member and guest events. But the one that is really exciting, because we've partnered with Junior Achievement, and the two beneficiaries from the corporate sponsorship money that's coming in and any donations that people make are going to be split evenly between Junior Achievement and the Pay It Forward Foundation. And so it was their idea, and they came up with this, why don't we recruit 50 of the JA fellows who are high school students that have been involved in Junior Achievement, high achievers, highly motivated. Do you think you could recruit 100 executives, business owners, business people who will match up with each one of the 50 JA fellows? Wow. And I'll give about an hour, 20-minute talk that morning prior to the luncheon that's going to be at 103 West. And then the JA fellow will be the NetWeaver host. Mm. And they will each get a bio of the two execs, business owners, that they are going to be NetWeaving. And somewhere during the meeting, in addition to moderating it and hopefully encouraging them to find ways to help each other, they will be the one to turn the tables and basically ask their two execs to pay it forward and to host a meeting for two others. And I really believe both at this age, doing a lot more teaching at the college level, that if young people can learn this concept very early in their careers, and especially because today a problem that we're hearing from employers is everything they're doing is online as opposed to net weaving, which is always, most of the time, done in person.
Right.
This is really a skill set that can really help so many of these young people coming out of school with all kinds of internet skills, but not with personal skills.
Have you seen a way to integrate the net weaving skill set with the social media?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's absolutely no question, and I sincerely believe this. Net weaving would not have worked 20 years ago. I am creating so many what I would call meaningful, truly meaningful relationships that if it weren't for the internet, if it weren't for LinkedIn and Plaxo and Facebook and all the other ones and ways that you can stay in touch with people, it wouldn't work. And so I'm a great believer in finding ways to use the social networks. I primarily personally use them more to identify people that I think are like-minded in along the lines of net weaving, and then I'm the one that typically actually makes the overture.
Now, can you kind of walk us through how you do that? Like an example of just maybe you're reading something or you bump into somebody. How do you, you know, jump on the LinkedIn and find somebody that you think would be worthy of net weaving?
Well, for example, currently, I discovered through a lady with AT&T who wrote me this wonderful note and said, Bob, I heard you speak at a TurkNet leadership woman's meeting 3 years ago, and I want to buy you breakfast, and I want to tell you what a difference it's made in my career and my personal life. And we got together, and we started hosting these meetings back and forth. And lo and behold, I discovered after she actually hosted two meetings to introduce me to males, I said, I wonder when a woman in her professional career becomes confident enough that she becomes gender neutral, where she's just as comfortable introducing two high-level males as two high-level females, or one female, one male. And all of a sudden it hit me, that's a teachable concept. And so now what I've done is gone out on LinkedIn and looked for women's leadership groups, because I believe not only for senior women like this woman to help, quote, break through the glass ceiling, but I also did a program about 5 years ago for Lead Atlanta, which is the junior version of Leadership Atlanta, and a young lady came up to me afterwards, oh, I just love your net weaving. I'm going to start doing so much. And 4 years later, here she is, head of PR and communications for Primrose Schools, and she connected me with their CEO, Joe Kirshner,
She's been a guest.
Oh, what a dynamo. Well, what a dynamo.
And plus the guy whose company owns all the primroses.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, my
Steve Rourke.
Yeah.
And then the PR person. They were all in this one room.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's funny. And Glenn Jackson?
No.
Okay. Well, anyways, but it's, you know, so that's really one of the projects that I'm really working on right now. And that's everything from identifying women's leadership groups to colleges.
When you say you identify these women's leadership groups, you search for women's leadership groups and then you reach out to them? And what do you say in this initial contact?
Well, to a certain extent now, I've created pretty much a sales talk, if you might want to call it that, for how I believe that this would work. And one of my first forays was, I said, you know what? I know the two women who form Pink Magazine, and Genevieve Boss and Cynthia Good. Mm-hmm. And I wrote Cynthia a note and told her, how would you like to have a male blogger on Pink? And so now I'm the token male blogger on Pink.
And I've
just done three blogs so far, but they're all on that same line, and I just genuinely believe. And you know, Lee, for me, I think as we talked a little before we got on, this is so usual for me because I was constantly, prior to the internet ever coming along, I would read an article that I would like, and I would call up the author. And I'm just amazed at how few people do what I would call follow through. I define follow up as simply taking some action. But follow through is the quality and the creativity with which you follow up. And actually, just this morning, I got an email from Seth Godin. You probably know Seth, Purple Cow,
right,
and the Idea Virus, and many others. And he had directed this woman who'd heard about something that I call the NetWeaver's Quilt, which is my version of 6 degrees of separation. And so rather than just doing a little, you know, hi, how are you? You know, I sent her the diagram and a fairly detailed description of how it works. And I will bet you that something, I don't know, but it just always has, something will come of that just makes it fun.
That's interesting. I think it takes people off guard sometimes when you do respond, like you call the author. I don't think that happens very often, and it does take a bold person,
right,
or someone with really good intentions, and you really do need to serve it up right. I always go into the kitchen at a restaurant that I like, and the waiter's like, well, nobody ever asks to go into the kitchen, but if I really like my dish, I always say, I want to go back and meet the chef. And therefore, I have developed all these great chef relationships everywhere I go, but it's not normal. And so I think calling the author, but once you do it once, it feels natural the next time.
And that's one reason why I'm really anxious to do programs that can simply get younger women to step out of their comfort zone, to just take that one step. Because you just said, Amy, once you do it, just imagine now that I'm teaching 25, 30-year-old young women how to how to read the Business Chronicle for two newsmakers who would benefit meeting, or listening to your radio show,
right,
hearing a great interview with someone, calling them up and saying, gee, I'm so-and-so. I just got out of graduate school last year at Georgia State, and I heard this wonderful interview on the radio with you, and I also read this article about so-and-so whose company is just coming to town. And there's a concept called net weaving that we studied that is all about just connecting to people. And I would love if you would let me to see if this other individual would let me host a meeting for the two of you, and if you don't mind, could I sit in and just listen?
Mm-hmm.
Now, who in their right mind, especially a young lady with the courage to make that call, that they would see more as a daughter or in some cases a granddaughter? And not only that, but what I found in some of the limited number of cases where I've kind of mentored some young ladies, what a way to get by gatekeepers.
You're
I mean,
right.
The gatekeeper sees her as a daughter or a granddaughter with the courage to do that.
Right. Now, isn't it interesting, we've interviewed, on these shows here, hundreds of authors. What's the percentage that you found of authors that get lots of calls? Like, typically, how many calls from fans do authors get?
Oh, it's very small. It's probably 1 or 2%.
Right. It's that. But in the head of the reader, they think that they're so busy. Yeah. They're like bombarded with attention. But these people are like usually introverted people who are just so happy that someone likes what they have to say. They're excited to engage with them.
Exactly. Well,
and you know how I met Jeffrey Gittimer, who's one of the top business gurus in the world.
I love Jeffrey Gittimer.
I had a young fellow who worked for me. Who was captain of the Davidson basketball team when he went to school. And so I'd been reading Gittimer's column in the Business Chronicle, and I had to go over to meet at the time with Nations Bank, before us Bank America, over in Charlotte, and he was going over to Davidson. And I just called up Jeffrey and said how much I loved one of the columns that he wrote, and, gee, we're going to be in the area. Could we buy you a beer? Mm-hmm. So we got together, and it was probably 6 or 7 years later that he was having a public event over here in Atlanta. And I said, gee, would you be willing to piggyback a meeting on top of that on net weaving? And all the money from that will go to Junior Achievement. And so he agreed to do that. And then, incidentally, we had another kind of invitation-only reception the next night. And you know that in his book, The Little Black Book of Connections, he spends a whole section talking about those two meetings.
Wow. I think that's one Jeffrey Gittimer book I don't have. I've got a whole collection.
A Little Black Book of Connections.
Like Connections. I don't think I have that one.
Wow.
I'll have to get that. But what you said, too, is so interesting. People are so quick to complain or to send a comment that's negative to an author, or to complain about the meal they just had and want to see the chef because it wasn't right. But so often we hesitate and we're not so naturally tuned to compliment and to say, hey, I really like this. And
right.
Who in business isn't going to want to mentor and tell someone about what they do, especially if they're good at it and they love it? So, yeah, that's a really good point. And I like the scenario you gave about having the young woman call them and just invite them, because everybody wants to teach if they're excited about what they do, right? So is there any space left on the 103 event?
Well, anyone who would be interested in being on a waiting list, who's once again either executive, business owner, or entrepreneur, you could email me at chiefnetweaver@gmail.com. Right now, we're actually a little oversubscribed for the event. But incidentally, I take my hat off to CEO Netweavers Org that's started in Dallas, and we've started a chapter here. Who are co-sponsoring the event with another company, Purchasing Power. And so there's no cost to anyone who's attending the event. It's totally corporate sponsored. And thank you also to 103 West, who's giving us a real sweetheart price. So it just came together so nicely. And I am truly excited about that event next week.
Do you think it'll be an annual event?
There is not only will this be an annual event, but I've already been in contact now with at least 3 other cities that want to do something similar to this.
Now, can you talk a little bit about in your bio, it says you have 40 plus years of experience. Can you take us through a little bit about how this whole idea germinated and started? Because unless you were born to be a net weaver, but at some point you weren't, and then at some point you were. Can you talk us through
that
evolution?
Well, actually, I was born to be a net weaver. And the reason is, and it's funny, one of the books that I've covered in my Don't Need to Read the Book book club was Malcolm Gladwell's The Outliers. And that book teaches you to look back very early in your life about events that you'd never thought about that really had an impact. Mm. Well, my father was a scientist for NASA. And he graduated from high school at 15, and NASA, before it was NASA, was NACA. And my sister, who's 4 years older, is the other brilliant one. She just retired as a technical writer for MIT. But my goal at the dinner table, back when all meals were at the dinner table, was to somehow keep my mother from leaving the table in tears as my father and my sister would get in these knockdown, drag-out philosophical arguments. And so the piece of my personality was probably formed back then that just wanted to somehow help people communicate, why can't we all be friends kind of thing. And so the first article I ever wrote was in 1994 in an insurance trade press called Do a Favor Marketing. And the idea, just doing favors for people, not looking for anything in return. And one day, a good friend, in fact, that friend, Jeffrey Kreidel, will be at the meeting next week. We were brainstorming on, we called it DAFM, D-A-F-M, and the word netweaving popped out of my mouth, and I said, boy, I'm trademarking that sucker. And the first book that I wrote on this was actually all about people in financial services, attorneys, CPAs, financial planners, trust officers, who had been doing netweaving without a word for it. They built their practice by either connecting people, oftentimes before they were ever clients, or providing them with their resources gratuitously at first just as a way to build the relationship. And that's, it's just grown from there.
That's amazing. I was curious about that too, Lee, and I wasn't really sure, especially with your insurance background. I'm in the insurance industry, and I laughed at your story at the beginning because usually when people find that out, they go the other way. You know, they're like, oh, you know, they find it boring or that you're
going. No, it's a great way to shut somebody up on an airplane you don't want to talk to.
That's right. I sell insurance.
So you break out that card, the insurance card, if you don't want to talk to them?
Yeah, if the earbuds don't work and they still continue to bother you.
Good
but
tip.
It's so true because I think there are certain industries especially that have a stigma about them. And I was curious as to how you did break into the net weaving. So is insurance like your tennis? Is insurance to Bob as tennis is to Mike?
Well, actually, my 15 minutes of fame were back in 1994 when I had a Wall Street Journal front page article, caricature and all. Now, that's interesting when they do that. But I'd created a company called Second Opinion Insurance Services, where I'd identified that very few people had my combination of backgrounds as marketing vice president of a couple of companies. And also, I'm still the only person on the field side who's ever been asked to be a contributing editor of the medical journal. So I have the combination of product side and medical underwriting side. And so I realize that a lot of attorneys and CPAs get asked to be in that role when competing insurance agents for a very, very large insurance policy are making their recommendations, and the attorney and the CPA don't know who to believe. And so I am normally, when I do these, I'm typically retained by the attorney or the CPA simply, and I get paid on a fee just like the CPA or the attorney. But that's, once again, I do those almost twisting my arm to do them now because this is really where my real passion is.
I can only imagine that the caricature of you on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, you know, the caricature always accentuates one part of you. You had to have had a huge heart. I could just see it.
Well,
I could draw it myself.
I've got to tell you a real funny, quick story. When they don't tell you when it's going to hit.
Right.
Well, my old boss, who was an old McKinsey guy, said, Bob, just hope it's not front page, left bar, or right bar. That back in the old design of the pod, because those stories always start out, well, everybody thought Bob was a good guy until he embezzled 27. So every morning I would go out and it would be dark and I would look at the front page. And one morning I pick up beard, glasses, left bar. I'm ruined. It was another guy, luckily, but it was bad. So.
Oh, gosh. That's a great story. That's a great story. Gosh, I could talk to Bob all morning, but we have another show coming up. So any final thoughts for us, Bob? You want to let folks know how they can – is there a central website that people can find out about?
Oh, thanks.
For the Pay It Forward Week?
Yeah, the Pay It Forward Week is netweaving-PIF, as in Pay It Forward, P as in Paul, IF. Dash week.com, and there's tremendous information and there's instructions. There's even a little video of how you set up a hosting meeting and actually running one. So there's all kinds of helpful information on there. But I would just challenge everyone, if you've never hosted a meeting, just next week, call two friends up and just say, gee, there's this really neat concept that I'd like to learn more about, and I'd like to just host a lunch or a breakfast or a cup of coffee and connect you to someone else. And I just think the ripple effects from this are going to be felt for years in advance, and years coming, and I just truly hope that this will become an annual event.
terrific.
I'm sure it will be.
It's got to be. And you know what we can say? We had you in the inception. You were here in the beginning.
Well, and I really am thankful for you doing this, too. Thanks.
Hopefully you'll come back next year, if not sooner, right?
That's it.
Until next week, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show. But you know what? One last thought.
What?
With this whole conversation of the net weaving, tune into our show next week at 8:45 because I'm going to net weave.
You are?
I am. I've invited two people I know through business, and they're going to meet. And it's going to, well, I don't know whether we should tell them I'm net weaving or if
maybe
it's just going to come natural.
Because it will be the week. Next week is
you
the
bet.
Week. So this will be in honor
a
of the
celebration.
Week.
That's great.
A live example of net weaving. On the air.
Yeah, but tune in early because when you're net weaving, sometimes you have to be flexible. So I had to move the show up a little bit because
to accommodate them.
Very busy professional. So 8:45 next Wednesday, tune in for some net weaving. Until then, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show.